All right, tonight I'd like to talk about thought as a object of meditation and kind of our relationship to thought as meditators and how that is such a critical piece, kind of as we were talking about in the questions and answers, kind of a milestone in our practice. And when we stop believing everything we think is a simple way of saying it. That so often we believe every thought that comes up as being valid, as being true, and we start to see how random the thoughts can be. And at the same time, we start to appreciate the thoughts which do seem to have a quality of clarity, a quality of skillfulness, a quality of faithfulness. I'm going to attend to those with more emphasis. So far in the class, you know, until tonight, we really emphasized body, breath, you know, sound, you know, as objects of meditation. Even emotions as body sensations. The reason why I wanted to emphasize this early on is to help us really find that place of grounding the body, to just orient to what the body is experiencing right here, right now, and helps to orient us to the body, but also to the present moment. Otherwise, it's, you know, our habit is really to become lost in thought, to drift into the world of thought, into the past, into the future. Worry, fantasy, planning, remembering, and whatever our favorite things are, and how random thoughts can be, and also how gripping they can be. And so our life often is lived really oriented to the thinking mind, to the fantasy world, to obsessing, to thinking, to planning, to controlling, problem solving, all these patterns. And we forget that there's this whole other experience going on through our body and actually the present moment. And so learning how to reconnect is so important. I may have mentioned this before, but in James Joyce's novel, Dubliners, he had a character named Mr. Duffy. And there's a line that Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. You know, and how often have we driven someplace and not even realized how we got there because we just went on autopilot. We're kind of lost in our daydream, lost in our worry, and didn't realize, we didn't experience any of that life. And there's little examples, big examples that throughout our day, through our life. So learning to really connect with this present moment, to find where our body is, and doing so, we really finding the present moment is a profound gift we give ourselves. And it's not just ourselves. To be able to actually show up for another person, to actually be present for them, to not, you know, thinking about what I'm going to say, but actually deeply listening. This is a profound gift for our relationships, for the people we touch and contact throughout our lives. So this stage in the class, we start to move from letting go of thought, because that's been instructions up until tonight. Thought arises, notice it, and let go. Ideally, as Beth was mentioning, with a quality of kindness, with a quality of, okay, there's this thought. Thank you. And then you release it and come back. Because otherwise, thought can be a bit like a fast-moving stream that we want to just kind of wade into as meditators, but we find ourselves swept down miles downstream because of that, the momentum of thought, how it draws us into it. So learning to the difference between thinking about something and the direct experience of it is one of the first fundamental milestones we have as meditators. It's like, okay, what's my idea of something? And realizing that idea is not the actual thing. The idea of something is not the actual thing. Because so often our ideas are a little distorted, are a little bit off base. So tonight we explored, you know, how to expand instructions to include thinking, learning how to observe thought in itself, recognizing its presence. And we played around with labeling. Here's the thought that's arising. And maybe even labeling it as planning or as worry. There's fantasy. Now, when we are able to observe something like that and label it, say, okay, this is what I'm thinking right now, That means we're shifted into a place of observation. We're not lost in the thought. We're not lost in the content or that world, if you will, of the thinking mind. We've gained some perspective. It's almost like we've stepped back and we're observing the thought process instead of being lost in it. We actually know that we're thinking, you know, versus we're so busy thinking, you don't even realize that we're thinking. So we start to see thinking and thought objectively. We're not being so lost in thought. So this starts to open a very different relationship to thinking than we usually have. Usually when thoughts arise, we take them as being very substantial, as being kind of a statement of reality. Now, if a thought is a statement of reality, we, of course, relate to it in a different way. Now, that's sometimes very helpful because it approximates reality, helps us live our lives skillfully. And often, it's not so skillful. It's not so accurate. It's because we often have a story about something, and we create a thought about something, and we create a whole story. We create a play that we act in. So let me give you a little story to help make this concrete. And this is also through Sharon Salzberg, who I mentioned last week, who's a great author and teacher in this tradition, this lineage. So she's saying that I was teaching with my colleague, Joseph Goldstein, who, by the way, is another very senior teacher. Sharon and Joseph were some of the first Westerners to bring this tradition back to America. So I was teaching with my colleague, Joseph Goldstein, when a student came to see him in great distress. The man had a terrible experience. He was meditating, felt tension in his jaw, and suddenly realized what an uptight person he was, how he can't get close to anyone, and that he's going to be alone for the rest of his life. Joseph said, "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" The man continued with his projections. He said he was pretty sure he would always be tense. He would never change. He felt hopeless. "You mean you felt some tension in your jaw?" Joseph said. I watched the man continue barreling down this path of misery for some time, all because of a sore jaw. Until finally Joseph said, "You're having a painful experience. Why are you adding a horrible self-image to it?" So this story, you know, speaks to this relationship to thought so clearly that we have a sensation arise, and pretty soon we have an idea of what it means about us. And it can easily tap into and tie in to, like in this man's case, his belief about being uptight and being alone for the rest of his life. He created this whole story based on this one sensation. So learning how to connect with a sensation and notice when your thought arises, that's an abstraction. That's an interpretation. Now, this is kind of radical to consider this because, you know, many of us, this is how we do our jobs. This is how we navigate the world, is we have some sense data and we make a whole story around it. And sometimes we can make a story that's very skillful and allows us to navigate life. But I think if we reflect, perhaps not too deeply, we see how many times we make that story and one that creates us more and more stress for ourselves, more and more difficulty. So this is the power of thought, that it really creates, it's not only the elaboration of the story around it, in an essential way, we're really creating who we are in that moment in relationship to the thought. We're really driven by it. In some ways, we're victims by it if we're not conscious to it. So learning to relate to thought just as another experience is so fundamental and so essential as our growth and development as meditators. You know, the bumper sticker that says, "Don't believe everything that you think." You know, I think this day and age with the state of our country, you can see how powerful and destructive believing in thoughts can be. You know, how painful that can be, that sense of what is true and what is not true. It's all contracted around a belief. So learning to start to relate to thought a little bit more objectively, a little bit less convinced by its validity, its inherent truth, is so helpful. I mean, you've probably noticed how random and how all over the place your mind goes. That you're meditating and you're thinking about something 20 years ago, and the next moment you're thinking about tomorrow, and it just kind of, it's like a untrained dog that's sniffing this spot and this spot. It's going all over the place. You know, so learning how to kind of marshal our attention, to steady our attention. Then it allows us to use thought as an actual tool to help us create, to plan, but always hold it in perspective of what it really is. Now, from Buddhist thought, Buddhist philosophy, and psychology, thought is considered another sense. That's really an interesting thing to consider, that we have our normal five senses of smell, of taste, etc. But imagine putting thought just as another sense. So just how the nose, that's the gate, the organ that smells, the eyes are what sees. Once if the mind is, what it does is just it thinks, it perceives thought. Now, when you take that in, it's like, okay, there's these six senses. What if I held them all equally, more balanced in my attention? And that's a nice way to practice, is start to hold all these senses in a balanced way. Usually we emphasize, you know, there's the body, we're kind of aware of it sometimes, but our thoughts, that's kind of the pinnacle. That's what we put our energy into. And so learning to balance that. Now, often as we practice, you know, especially early on or even, you know, later on, sometimes our minds get in a certain way. Our attention is a little bit like a seesaw, that we're either sensing or thinking. We kind of have an either or. Okay, I'm feeling this breath, and then I'm thinking about my trip to Hawaii that got canceled. Then I'm feeling this sensation, and then I'm thinking about my unpaid bills, whatever it might be. We kind of go back and forth. And often when we start to think, our senses become more dull. We kind of lose contact with what's present. That's the phenomenon of kind of going through, our body's going on autopilot, and we're thinking about something, but not really present to how we did things. Like, I seem to have already eaten breakfast, but I don't remember tasting any of the food, kind of a thing. And so we're really wired to focus on thought, to engage in thought. So this is a significant thing to learn, to start to put thought in a perspective, to start to rebalance the rest of the body. So this certainly helps us free up our attention to be more present. But in an even more fundamental way, it helps us to start to understand the deeper beliefs that we take as being true. Deeper beliefs about ourselves, defining thoughts. And as one person talked about that, and that difficulty of having compassion for yourselves, that's kind of tapping, showing you that deep quality of belief of self-diminishment, of self-inadequacy. And that's, you know, a pattern that, you know, I certainly have worked with for many years, and many people also work with, you know, successfully as meditators. Because when we have a thought, we're kind of creating the whole world in relationship to that thought, especially if it's one that we really identify with. A simple example of how subtle this is, but how profound it is there's a bridge that was built in France a number of years ago. Now, this bridge was one of the biggest bridges in the world. It was actually the bridge between France and Germany. And the Germans looked at this bridge, and the newspapers described it as elegant and graceful, you know, just very poetic terms. The French looked at the same bridge, the same concrete, the same steel, and described it as, you know, massive and powerful and, you know, in very kind of masculine terms, while the Germans looked at it from a more of a feminine terms. Now, this is kind of makes you scratch your head, like the same object is interpreted completely different by these two cultures. And the reason is that the language of Germany, of German, I should say, has bridge as a feminine noun, while France, it's a masculine noun. So then our whole, all the momentum we carry with gender identity and projections around gender gets placed on this external object. So those Germans and those French people, French, I was going to say Frenchmen, but that's, I don't know if that's quite right. So French citizens are not seeing the bridge for what it is. They're seeing through their deep conditioning, you know, how they were raised early on to relate to language. Now just think of that example and how that shows up in so many ways in our lives. How we see someone who is other than us, who we've been conditioned to see as less than us. Some of the seeds of so much racism, so much prejudice in our lives. You know, looking at sexism, you know, how we perhaps conditioned to look at what gender is less than, you know, ageism. There's all these deep patterns which are kind of baked into our system. The good news is meditators, we start to wake up to that. We start to see that. And by seeing it, we become more and more free of it. We become more and more free the clearer we see. When we're unconscious, those thoughts have tremendous momentum over us. So that's what I just said is a very significant, has significant implications for our whole life, for everything that we touch, everything we relate to in our lives. So that perhaps helps makes context of how we've been relating to thought through the meditation technique. To first to learn to kind of unmesh ourselves with thought, to notice here's thought, here's my experience. My idea of something is not the actual thing itself. The thing itself, we can't, if we're really attentive, we have no words for it. You know? If we explore, sometimes we see something that is so breathtakingly beautiful or so immense that we just are speechless. We have no words for because we're just connecting with it in a very deep, intimate way. And then we say, oh, isn't that a beautiful sunset? Suddenly we've kind of created a level of distance to it. That distancing, that sense of separation. This is all part of what thought does. It's helpful, you know, thought again has a huge use for our lives, helps us understand, you know, how to take a drink of water from my mug instead of my pencil. You know, we understand and distinguish that. But so you can see how we start to understand thought is not reality itself. It's just a description of that. And we start to notice how often we've kind of painted life a certain way based on our condition. So we start to see through our projections. Another quick example, you know, let's say we have we all have a tree in our front yard. Now, if we have, you know, trained ourselves as a forester, we look at that tree in terms of a certain lens, certain idea. We're relating to it from our history, our training. Perhaps we are a homeowner, and we're worried about the tree falling down on our house, or we like that it gives us shade, or we don't like that it gives us a shade. We're relating to the tree from that standpoint. Perhaps we're a kid who wants to put up a swing in that, then we're relating to it from that perspective. So each of those lenses changes the very way we relate to life. Learning how to see through those natural lenses and actually connect with life directly, again, such a profound gift to give ourselves in the world. So how to work with thought? You know, so first, again, we need to practice releasing thought to come back to it. Releasing it in a skillful way, in a kind way, is very helpful. Because if you're judging the fact that you're thinking, guess what? You're just adding more thoughts to the process. So coming into that heartfelt quality of, okay, here's thought. Thank you for being here. And now I'm going to coming back to my breath, to my body. You know, where am I right now? Where's the body experience? And the stronger thought pull has, you know, the more we have to ground to the body. But as your practice deepens, it starts to mature, you can start to notice as thoughts arise, you can start to label that. So, okay, there's a planning thought, there's a worry thought. And that starts to give you that sense of objectivity. So And eventually you can actually observe thought as it's arising and start to see that almost like a sound going through your experience or a sensation. Okay, there's that thought. And you can observe it just like you would a breath or a sensation. So in this way, we start to realize thought, you know, it's really its true use for us, how skillful it can be helpful, how skillful and helpful it can be in our lives. We also start to see its detriment. We start to free us ourselves from that. And that way, we find our lives are starting to become transformed. They're connecting directly with life instead of our ideas of it. All right, let's just sit quietly for a couple of moments, letting those words settle.